The Anton Savage Show Sunday.
Brought to you by PwC. Combining talent and technology, we're hardwired to find solutions.
On News Talk.
Russell Crowe is going to be returning to Ireland July 1st, playing in the Gaiety Theatre with Indoor Garden Party. Good morning, Russell. How are you?
Morning, Anton. How would you be?
I would be very well. I was going to say to you that the Gaiety is a lovely venue and that it must be nice to play in such salubrious surroundings until I saw the other venues that you're playing in. You're kicking this whole schmozzle off in the Coliseum.
Yeah, we've got a few big gigs on this tour, man. We play in the Coliseum. We play in the ancient amphitheatre in Pompeii. We play in the Piazza del Popolo in Ascoli Piceno. But it's kind of, you know, we've got a festival or two that we're playing as well, but it's a big sweeping difference between venues. You know, some of them are kind of standing room only, you know, beer halls kind of thing. And then some of them are beautiful, architecturally perfect theaters like the Gaiety.
Well, yeah, indeed. I mean, not to besmirch the Gaiety anyway, but like the amphitheater in Pompeii, that must be amazing.
Well, you know, I've seen it, and I've seen, you know, I've stood there, but I've never seen it set up for a concert. But it's pretty exciting. They tell me that the last, and I know this is going to sound kind of crazy, but the last big concert that was there was 50 years ago. It was Pink Floyd.
Oh, have you ever? I had forgotten. Pink Floyd live at Pompeii is one of the great live studio videos. It is richly Spinal Tap. It's quality. It's well worth a watch. They take it to 11 all the way through. So that's the last in Pompeii. And come here.
Well, I don't know. Somebody just said that online. I'll probably, you know, do a bit of research and find out. There's been 10,000 concerts there since, but that's what was pointed out to me. But yeah, we're also playing in Bari, in Diamante, in Siena. But you know, we're in Paris as well, and we're also in Warrington.
Well, I laugh at Warrington. I should point out that one of the gigs that it isn't the Coliseum, it isn't the amphitheatre in Pompeii, but it is nonetheless likely to be important to you. The Inverness gig, that's you heading home.
Well, you know, the thing is, the deeper I look into my family background, you know, my DNA has been spread through about quite a large swathe of the world. So yeah, there's connections everywhere. But recently, what you're referring to is I found out through a relative of mine, a guy called John Jock Fraser, who arrived in New Zealand in 1841 aboard a boat called the Whitby. He is directly related to Simon Fraser, the 11th Lord Levatt, who was also known as the Old Fox. And he was the last man to have his head chopped off at the Tower of London. His head chopped off his live body. They kept doing that process, but only to corpses after that. So he is the man who was the last man executed in the Tower of London. And he was told that because the king had set up all of these temporary grandstands so everybody could see the demise of the Old Fox, who had been a very Machiavellian character and switching between the English throne and the Jacobites and everything, basically depending on where he could get the best deal and the most power and money and prestige out of who he connected to. So at the age of 80, which is pretty pointless, really, they decided that he was going to be executed. And just before his execution, one of those temporary stands fell down and 9 people died. Right. He was told that just before he was executed, and he started to laugh, and then they chopped him, right? So the saying, laughing his head off, dates to that particular instance. And isn't that crazy? But what I was also told, that Simon Fraser, the 11th Lord Levatt, is also related directly to, I believe, the 6th Lord Levatt, who was, again, another Simon Fraser, who was the battle companion of Robert the Bruce. And there are 3 crowns on the Fraser of Levatt Shield, right? And they represent the three times that Simon Fraser saved Robert the Bruce's life.
I shouldn't
be surprised.
So that's
incredibly rich. But yeah, here's the other interesting thing, right? So you've got Norwegian, you've got Italian. We've been able to trace that back to the early 1800s to Ascoli Piccino and Palmer. You've got New Zealand Maori, and you've got this Scottish connection that is on both sides, because we've got Fraser of Lovat and Cunningham on my father's mother's, but also on my mum we have Weems, right? However, when my niece recently got her DNA testing done, it came back at 51% Irish.
Oh, thank God.
We don't know why.
How do you mean you don't know why?
Well, because we can't, you know, what the information we've got so far, because some people have left Ireland, right? And they've gone to Cape Town or they've gone somewhere else and they've made a different life. So they don't necessarily, you know, say, you know, Anne Major is from Ireland or whatever, you know? But so we've got to have a series of you know, I'm assuming women that men of the family have married into have an Irish background.
And did we not do when you were here? Normally, when somebody of Hollywood stardom is in Ireland, somebody reaches out and does a genealogy thing, which inevitably proves that fundamentally you're Irish. Did nobody do that for you when you were living here?
No, but we've you know had a little look into it. But and there's kind of an assumption of a direct Crow connection, but it might not be that at all.
Well, we'll have to rectify this, Russell. We can't let it go without claiming you.
But isn't that funny, though? With all these other things that we know of, and I've always had a sense about Ireland, and you know, we've probably discussed this in the past, that I somehow belong, you know what I mean? But it's so weird to look back through that history and all the bits that we do know. We know when the Norwegian fellow arrived. We know when the Scottish fellow arrived. We know how the Maori connection happens, and it's Ngāti Porou, and we know the name of that relative, you know, whose name was actually Puti Puti, my great-great-great-grandmother on my mother's father's family is a blood relation. So, but we can't really see where the Irish is. So it must predate, man. It must be like 1700s or something, you know what I mean?
Well, this all started because I mentioned you going back to Inverness as one of the gigs that you must be looking forward to on the Indoor Garden Party Tour. And I should say, of course, tickets for on sale now. July 1st, Russell and the guys are going to be in the Gaiety. But the thing that I hadn't realised until I read around it was, when you look at all the Italian gigs you're doing, you got made an ambassador for Rome to the world. That must be the best gig in the world.
Look, that was pretty special. You know, they asked me to go to the mayor's office, but they hadn't really told me what it was for. And then he made this sort of, because I'd been there in the past, and they give you these little statuette things that, you know, you can go and buy in the tourist shop for 10 euro. But you know, I say, oh yeah, thanks very much for my little statuette, you know, of a wolf or whatever, or a drinking fountain, or you know. And then when he sort of made the announcement, it was a pretty special moment, man. Ambasciatore di Roma nel mondo. Ambassador for Rome in the world. So, you know, I think it's really something that, you know, it's super special for your mum.
Oh, don't knock it. Don't knock it. It's nice to be able to have
No.
Even just to print it on a business card.
My kids are both, you know, Charlie's 20 now and Tennyson is 17. And they're obsessed with Italy, you know, from a history point of view. In fact, Charlie's studying Latin and ancient Greek at the moment at Sydney University. So, for them to like have experienced that thing and I get given that title or whatever, it's just fun, man. It's cool.
I do need to ask your advice on something, or rather your view on something, because today, of course, is the day of the Oscars. Cillian Murphy in Oppenheimer is tipped, fingers crossed, all going well, etc., as the winner for the Best Actor category. And there are only 85 people, if I have the numbers right, in total, who have had the experience of getting one of them, of whom only about 60-odd are still around, of whom you are one. Is it as exciting and impactful to go through as one imagines?
Well, from the experience of having done like three consecutive Academy campaigns, which start way earlier than you would, you know, rationally believe, and there's, you know, there's 20 or so other award ceremonies that you go to, from National Board of Review through to things like that you've heard of, like the Golden Globes or whatever, or the Screen Actors Guild. So I would imagine right about now, Killian's feeling a little battered, you know, but...
Oh, because it is like a campaign. It's like a political campaign, is it? You have to put some effort into it.
Oh, it goes on forever, man. Yeah, and especially if it's a major studio film. They want to pick up every single vote that they can possibly pick up. So, you know, the actors are the face of the movie, so you're the ones that get trotted out, you know. So I'd imagine that he's, you know, feeling the weight of all that. But, you know, I don't really know him very well, but I did meet him when he first started to make movies in America, and just told him that I thought he was spectacular actor. I'd seen a couple of independent Irish films at the time, and I just you know, took the moment to, you know, give him a positive G up, you know. So here's the thing, you know, it's in the history of the SAG, which is Screen Actors Guild, and Academy Awards, it's very, very rare for the person who wins SAG, because actors are one of the biggest voting groups in the Academy, it's very rare for the person that wins SAG to not win the Oscar. So he would have to be, you know, an absolute favorite at this point in time.
We won't jinx him. We better not jinx him.
Beautifully, you know.
Did you see the performance? What did you think of the performance in Oppenheimer?
Well, it's just brilliant, man. You know, and it's a very deserving situation if it comes up for him. But, you know, the way he's handled himself at the Screen Actors Guild and other award shows and everything, you know, I think he's doing very well, because that all becomes part of it too, you know, because some people don't vote till the very last minute. So, and sometimes you have block voting situations that, you know, where, you know, a studio might have X amount of people that are Academy Academy members, and they all vote the same way, you know. So, you know, good luck to him, man, I think. And, you know, if he gets it, it's well-deserved, and it's brilliant for him, it's brilliant for Ireland, and it's brilliant for cinema in general. So, all good.
We will keep our fingers crossed. It's funny to talk to you about the acting, because I always get the sense when you talk about music and when I see you perform, that the music, it kind of, because you are perceived predominantly, of course, as actor, because that's what drives or what has driven the global fame. I get the sense that you are almost most at home when you're performing music.
Well, there's a sense of freedom to it, you know. With acting, you know, obviously it's very schedule heavy. You have a huge amount of responsibilities. Like, as soon as we finished chatting today, and I've got, you know, like, I've actually got to go and see the mayor of Rome and stuff this afternoon, but about the concert that's coming up at the Colosseum. But, you know, it's very schedule specific. And I'm, you know, part of my day to day will be beginning the process of learning the 17-page scene that, like, about 9 days from now or 10 days from now, I will start doing on the set of Nuremberg with Michael Shannon. Now, a long scene in a movie is 5 pages. 17 pages of dialogue between two people is almost unheard of. So this is going to be a Shakespearean effort to just get that to stick in my old brain. But... you know, so there's quite a lot of constant pressure in that regard, where the schedule requires you to have, you know, nailed certain things before you arrive on the set. Now, having said that, also when you're touring, there's always that constant pressure too, because it's performance and it's moving. But in those hours on the stage, it's completely free. And I never really know what's going to happen between me and the audience, or what story that might come to mind that I'm going to tell that night, you know. So, I mean, you have a set list or whatever, but I've also got the complete freedom to turn around and go, boys, we're doing blah, and we just go into a different song, you know.
And what's nice as well is you have
an anarchic aspect to it.
You get to pick.
Makes it so immediate and gives you such a thrill, you know, as a performer, you know. And it's my theatre, Anton. You know, a lot of guys in my position making movies, they came up in theater. And whereas I did, you know, I did stage musicals like Grease, like the Rocky Horror Show, like Blood Brothers. I did some straight plays. What I mainly did, what I did for a living, was gig. You know, I was I played in nightclubs, I played in pubs. For a six-month period, I bussed on the street because I had no other form of income. So that's what I did. So to me, when I go back into a rock and roll mode, that's me going back to my theater, you know? So just like, you know, Anthony Hopkins might finish, you know, Silence of the Lambs or something, then go, I'm going to go and do a season of King Lear to get my sort of chops back, you know? And that's what it is for me. With music, it's going back to the thing that energized me in the first place to take on everything else that I've ever done. So and music to me is like an essential driving force of my creative life.
Presumably as well, the cool thing about it being your theatre is you can pick the cast because, I mean, at the Irish gig is case in point, you have Janet Devlin playing with you.
Yep.
You get to be able to say, here's who I'd like to perform with.
Last year, and she did like 20-something shows with us. And then she also did two shows in Italy with us as well, I think, Roma and Bologna last year. She's just great, man. She's great. She's got a beautiful voice, wonderful sensibility as a person, as a performer. You know, some people just take the stage and people are mesmerized. She's that kind of girl, you know? She walks on the stage and then she's sort of like, I don't know, she's part Stevie Nicks, part dock worker. I don't know. It's amazing. She has this angelic quality, but she's also very, she's like sharp as a knife, you know, she's great. So I'm really looking forward to her being back on the bill. And of course, we've got the magical Lorraine O'Reilly on the bill as well. And she's really, Lorraine now after these years, it's been like 7 years we've been performing together. She's really just part of the band, but she's, you know, we give her a separate billing because she's so amazing, you know. Laurie, the voice, they call her, you know, she can sing, like, she's like kind of, I don't know, she's like an Irish Bonnie Raitt or something. She's got such growl and gravitas in her voice, but she's also so lyrical and melodic, you know. So we've got those two. And, the Indoor Garden Party is the umbrella, but under the umbrella is now this band, the Gentlemen Barbers. And so whereas the last time we played at the Olympia, it was like a completely different group of people, really. But now this is more of a four-on-the-floor sort of band, you know, where everything's sort of like we're not so reliant on computer tricks and tracks like the concert at the Olympia, you know, which gives you a certain level of perfection, but it does take away some of that freedom. So, but these guys, man, you know, like Dave Kelly, I started playing as the drummer, you know, I started playing with him 30 years ago, Stuart Kerwin, the trumpeter, you know, 1995 or something was the first gig we did. Stuart Hunter on piano. I started working with Stuart 2005. Chris Kanzelis, guitarist, 2006. James Hazelwood, the bass player, he's the youngest member of the band, but he's already been around coming on 5 years. So there's deep, deep history with this band, and it really, really shows in the concerts. You know, they are monster players, and people really appreciate it, you know. So it's you know, an indoor garden party gig is always going to end up with you on your feet.
Well, I should say, if people want to be on their feet in the Gaiety, it is the 1st of July is the Gaiety Theatre in Dublin. If you want to go somewhere really salubrious, there's Warrington on the 4th of July, or you could go to the Colosseum in Rome on 23rd of June. I should say, Russell, the fanciest sentence anybody has ever said to me in my entire life is, this afternoon I have to meet the Mayor of Rome about our gig in the Colosseum. Well, someday I want to say that.
Things come up because you're dealing with archaeological park people, right? So there's a separate director for the Colosseum, there's a separate director for the Forum, you know, but there's a strip of land in between that is purely the city of Rome. So that's the mayor. So my vibe on it is, look, we're going to do this gig. X amount of people will get a ticket. It's limited to 800 or something, right? But man, in this area that belongs to Rome, let's put up a screen. Let's put up some extra speakers. And anybody who wants to come to the show. That's what I'm trying to sell today. So I've got to put on the Ambasciatore di Roma nel Mondo salesman's hat. Go and sell the mayor on this idea.
Have you considered opening with, my name is Maximus Decimus Meridius? I'd say that.
If I have to resort to that, I will. I'm not proud.
Come here, before I let you go, next weekend we are going to be talking to Ray Winston on the show. Ray Winston is doing a thing with Guy Ritchie for Netflix. Ray, of course, out of The Departed and Sexy Beast and everything else. But I hadn't realized you and Ray Winston were in The Story of Jem Belcher together. What's he like to act with? Is he any good?
No. But we originally met, man, doing Noah.
Oh.
Yeah. He's the principal bad guy of Noah. So we actually didn't get to work together in the Jem Belcher, the prize fighter movie. He did his stuff, and I did my stuff separate days, separate times of the schedule. We never crossed paths at all, though we talked and texted. Because we became good friends on the set of Noah, you know. He's just a no-nonsense, get the job done, you know, and with a great grace sort of guy, you know. So I got on with him really well. But there's a funny moment, right? We're doing this fight sequence in Noah. And the unfortunate thing about working with Darren Aronofsky is, you know, every single thing you do, you're going to do way too many times for a human being. You know? So, and this fight, you know, we're both older guys. So when you're doing a 3-4 minute fight, that can represent a day or more of actual shooting, you know? So there was this one section of the fight where I had to lie on the ground. He lies on top of me and we start the next sequence from that position, right? So just a millisecond before action, every single take, Ray would elbow me in the ribs. So they'd be like rolling, you know, sound speed, whatever, and bang, you'd elbow my action. Like, so I'm starting every take, taking this shot in the ribs, you know. After about 9 takes, I went up to ask him about it. I said, Raymond, mate, what's going on? What's with the elbow in the ribs? And Ray Winston says to me, Russell, you are a younger man, and I am an older man, and you best learn to be wary of a man like me. Piss off, Ray. Stop doing it. It hurts.
I have to say, it's not a bad Ray Winston impression as well.
If I'd just done 1 minute of study, I could have perfected it. I'm so disappointed in myself that I didn't take the moment to do that.
Russell, it is always a great pleasure. I am conscious that I don't want to leave the mayor of Rome waiting for your discussion about access to the Colosseum, so I should let you go. If people want tickets, Indoor Garden Party is going to be on July 1st in the Gaiety. It is Russell Crowe, it is special guest Janet Devlin, and it is the rest of the Gentlemen Barbers, of course, in support and mutual culpability for the night. Russell, as always, thank you so much.
Cheers, Anton.
The Anton Savage Show.
Brought to you by PwC.
Sunday mornings from 10. On News Talk.